shining through.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I can't believe mine. All of this belongs to you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be having a very diverse journey, always starting with the latest on health and healing, so we can live a longer and healthier and happier life. I'll talk about how olive oil could slash your chance of bone fractures by 50%. I'll also look at the importance of red pigments. Now, red pigments would be in like a red pepper or a red chili. How about in a red apple? And even in oranges. And these are linked with a lower risk of lung cancer, Tufts University. And then we'll explore a study finds recurrent hypertensive disease of pregnancy associated with early mortality, meaning that if you're pregnant and you have high blood pressure, you could die earlier. So it's important to bring that under control, which is not difficult. University of Utah. And from the University of Melbourne, how coenzyme Q10 and soy and taurine can help boys with a fatal muscle wasting disease, and a lot more on health and healing. Then I will do a follow-up to yesterday's one-hour special with Professor Emeritus Guy McPherson. If you did not hear it, please go to the archives and download it. We had technical difficulties in the first about 12 minutes of the program, but what we did, I ran 12 minutes longer, edited out the first part, so you actually can hear his comments in a very easy manner. So all that was eliminated. But in there, he is making the statements that based upon all the feedback loops and all the tipping points that we have neglected to do anything about in our country, as well as in China and other countries, though some countries have a very good and a very forward-looking and sustainable environmental program. We just don't happen to be one of them, and we will be impacted. There are a handful of about 14 to 15 leading environmental scientists who agree with him in part. Not all agree that it's as bad, but some actually believe that it is worse, that we don't even have 10 years before civilization as we know it begins to be decimated. I will give some additional thoughts on that today. I'll give some positive solutions, and I'll also address this by having Bernie Sanders on today's program address the person who's about to head the Environmental Protection Agency and will be appointed, and why that shows you that we will receive no help, zero help from our federal government or major industries in this administration, as we did not with the Obama administration. It's amazing how egregious the violations people feel when it comes to Trump in the first week of his presidency, and found none of this to be egregious by in 8 years of Obama. The policies are virtually one and the same. And for that, I will be doing a commentary to share this with you. I don't know if I'll have a chance to get it all in today, but if not, certainly on our next couple of shows. We'll have an in-depth commentary from Jeffrey St. Clair from Counterpunch, the president who wasn't there, Barack Obama's legacy of impotence. Also, to show you that the system is broken, I will be setting aside probably the Tuesday evening program, our Progressive Commentary Hour, to do a one-hour, in-depth, articulate discussion of the death of liberalism and the rise of neoliberalism. It is not dying. It is on steroids today. And we can thank all of the Democrat and Republican pundits for promoting this in the media for not showing it for what it is. In that, I will be addressing Naomi Klein's Intercept article entitled Get Ready for the First Shocks of Trump's Disaster Capitalism. I will also have my own commentary on the death of liberalism, so that will be an interesting program. Also, I'll be sharing with you a clip I found from 1988 about what is happening today by Mr. Goldsmith, a British financier, on Charlie Rose. I appeared on Charlie Rose 20 years ago. He did a program at that time on PBS, and he's an affable and nice man to speak with. But watch what he says on this. He's defending neoliberalism and globalization, and this man takes him apart on it. Everyone needs to hear this. It is one of the most succinct, articulate, and persuasive arguments against everything that we've been doing for the last 32 years when it comes to our economic policies. My guest in the second part of our program today is Professor Jeff Heal. He is a Donald Waite Professor of Social Enterprise at Columbia University's Business School, where he specializes in economic theory and environmental economics. And we're going to talk about how the neglect of nature and the neglect of the environment and the neglect of biodiversity is threatening the nation's and the planet's economic prosperities. So we have a lot to share today. Let's begin. And we always begin this program, no matter where you live in the world, something that can help you. Americans outside of the Italian-American community and the French community generally have not been big on olive oil. That's unfortunate. We've been raised to use corn oil and lard and butter and margarine and peanut oil. All not good for you. Now, some could argue that butter is the least harmful, and I would agree with that if it's organic. Butter where the cows had no hormones, but even butter itself is still an animal byproduct, one that our body is not easy to absorb and utilize. But the oils that we should be using for cooking, there are three oils. Why? Because they have a high heat resistance. So based upon how high Americans like to cook their food, which is very unhealthy, creating acrylamides and heterocyclic amines, you should use only coconut oil, mustard seed oil, and macadamia nut oil. The oils you use at the end of cooking, when or very, very low cooking, would be olive oil. And the oils on your salads, flaxseed oil, avocado oil, walnut oil, these are all outstanding. According to a major study done in Spain, the more olive oil that you consume, the less likely you are to have fractures from osteoporosis. Now, why? Well, it's relatively simple. There are compounds in the olive oil called phenolic, P-H-E-N-O-L-I-C, phenolic. And these are extremely beneficial for your bone health. They lower the risk of fractures by over 51%. That is tremendous. They looked at over 870 people, and they saw that the more olive oil they consumed, if everything else was equal, with no adverse side effects, of course, the less bone fractures. And that's a big one. Quote, we found the greater consumption of olive oil in association with a lower risk of osteoporosis-related fractures in a Mediterranean population at high cardiovascular risk. Our findings highlight the consumption of olive oil, one of the key foods of the Mediterranean diet, in the prevention of osteoporosis-related fractures. And that's from the professor writing on that, and they wrote in the peer-reviewed journal Clinical Trials. By the way, olive oil, where 80% of the makeup is refined oil, a consumption is not associated with low risk of fractures in the United States. And that's because so much of the olive oil in the United States is not real olive oil. You should only buy the extra virgin, organic, cold-pressed, and then have verification from the manufacturer that or the importer that give me a statement. Because if they give you a statement, then they're legally liable. What you have are all these discount brands, all these box store brands. They're generally a small amount of olive oil. The rest is soybean oil or peanut oil. And that's part of organized crime running it. So get your right olive oil. Next up, from Tufts University, they've done a study that shows that the red pigments in fruits can lower the risk of lung cancer. This is important. For example, a pink orange would qualify for that. A red plum. A red sweet pepper. A red beet. These are anything red would benefit. Papaya, paprika. Also, this in qualifying this would be sweet potatoes and yams, which most people don't consume, but they should. Really healthy for you. And there's the pigment that works in the body at the molecular level to thwart lung cancer. And this was published in Cancer Prevention Research. They found that the chemicals in the red pigments appear to counteract one of the lesser-known abilities of nicotine, which is to accelerate the growth of lung tumors. So, to prevent cancer, eat red fruits. If you have cancer, eat red fruits and vegetables. From the University of Utah, a study finds recurrent hypertension disease of pregnancy associated with early death. Now, this is very serious because you don't generally think that someone who's young enough to be pregnant and have a child could also end up dying because they have high blood pressure. But that's exactly what has happened. And here's my suggestion, a positive slant. First, we know that sodium in excess of the body needs causes a thickening of the blood, which is very dangerous. And if you have a tendency to hypertension, and pregnancy frequently causes it because of the most of the women today are not as mobile as they should be. There's generally a pooling of water due to too much sodium into the ankles, causing edema. Edema and hypertension frequently go hand in hand. Now, it's normal and healthy to gain weight because you're really eating for two, and you want to make sure you have full-spectrum nutrients for the developing child. And if you do it right, you're exercising right up near delivery, and you're also using acupuncture in case you have any lower back pain. But potassium is the nutrient that can offset the adverse effects of sodium. If you were to drink an 8-ounce glass of good organic coconut water each day, that has about 450 milligrams of potassium. That's an enormous amount in one drink, which is terrific for you. If you were to take throughout the day enough potassium to equal your body's requirements and lower your down to about 1,200 milligrams of sodium, then you can put yourself out of harm's way. Vitamin C helps with high blood pressure as well. The B complex at 50 milligrams, vitamin E, and cayenne helps thin the blood. So if you had cayenne three times a day, let's say 40,000 heat units in one capsule, that would keep your blood platelets separated, lessening the probability of having this happen, a stroke or high blood pressure. So for those who are pregnant, that's important. And also, a study from the University of Melbourne found that there are some nutrients that can help boys with fatal muscle-wasting disease. And they found that the three that work the best are coenzyme Q10, soy, and taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. And here's what it says, quote, "These statistics are concerning given that many supplements are taken based purely upon anecdotal evidence. Many nutraceuticals, those are nutrients that help in the body, are thought to have anti-inflammatory and antioxidant effects. Given that the dystrophic pathology is exacerbated by inflammation and oxidative stress, these nutraceuticals could have some therapeutic benefit for this particular muscular dystrophy." And then it went on to say how well they worked. So, if you have any form of muscle condition, multiple sclerosis would be one, then you want to make sure you're getting anti-inflammatory nutrients. And coenzyme Q10 is one of the most important, as is taurine. And also, finally, they found that, this is from Arizona State University, that gut microorganisms, the good bacteria, show promise as a potential treatment for autism. Interesting, because we did a broadcast on this months ago where we talked about the power of good bacteria. And I'll explain why this happened. There was a great doctor a country doctor. He sounded like a country doctor, came from Alabama. His name was Dr. Crook. When I met him, I was about 22, 23. He was already, I guess, in his 70s. And I met him through a Dr. Ray Evers, also a good holistic Alabama physician, and a Dr. Roy Cupsnell. They were all meeting together to talk about candida. And he'd written a book on candida. And because Americans consume so much sugar and fermented foods, including alcohol, that cause the growth of candida or yeast overgrowth, he gave like caprylic acid from grape seed extract. So at one time during the 1970s and 80s, if you had candida overgrowth, yeast overgrowth, you took grape seed extract, or you juiced the juice of the seed, the skin, the pulp of lemons, limes, and grapefruits, not oranges. And it helped neutralize the bacteria. He also then suggested taking kefir, which is a fermented dairy product, rich in probiotics. And it worked. And so when I was looking at what he was doing, and then I compared that to what people around the world were doing, and did they have the same problems we had, and I became interested in why we suddenly had this uptick in autism. And one of the things you notice in all these people with autism is you have a proliferation of toxic bacteria in the gut, and with that can come chronic diarrhea. I've interviewed mothers who had children that would have diarrhea 7 hours a day. And, of course, when you have diarrhea, you're not absorbing your nutrients because the nutrients are not in the gut long enough to be absorbed. They're going right through. So then you end up with malnutrition, no matter how much you feed them. So I was helping these women to change the bacteria in the gut to slow down digestion so that their children would not suffer from malnutrition. In the process, I started getting feedback that there was some positive relationship between changing the bacteria in the gut and the symptoms of autism. And this is about 2 or 3 years before I started a study group where I actually work with autistic children. And every single one of these kids had a changeover in bacteria, but not just once, not just casually, not just by having a cup of yogurt, but I'm talking about heavy duty, 10, 20, 30 billion bacteria 2-3 times a day. And the more bacteria, the good bacteria, the changing in the digestion, the bloating, the gas, the distension, the diarrhea, and the energy began to change dramatically. And so I shared that. I wrote a series of articles. I attended some medical conferences and shared this. And some of the other doctors began to pick up on, if you got a kid with autism spectrum disorder, which is not a disease, it's a whole spectrum of conditions, then change the gut microbiome. Now, that was 20 years ago. Now, Arizona State University just discovered this. Quote from Arizona State University: "The key to fighting autism might lie not in the mind, but in the gut. A team led by Arizona State University researchers is taking a novel approach, the search for effective autism treatments by focusing on improving the gut microbiome through fecal microtransplants. Early results are promising, but additional testing is required before the FDA-approved therapy would be available." And, of course, what they're doing, they're trying to find something they can patent. But if you didn't know better, you would think this is the first time in medical history someone actually changed the gut of a child with autism and saw results. Wow. Well, it's good that they're doing it. I commend them on at least paying attention to the gut. And, of course, when Andrew Wakefield and a group of his on his team found the same thing in 12 autistic children in England, they found that they all had something in common, a lack of good bacteria in the biome in the gut. And for that, they were challenged and attacked. But as long as you're going to have a drug that's going to treat it, I guess you'll put some bacteria in there, but you'll patent it, and then suddenly, overnight, a miracle treatment. Well, that's what it is. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. to welcome everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. And I want to play you now a clip from Bernie Sanders challenging the new head of the EPA, because it's the head of the EPA who determines the entire scientific community's approach to, at least at the government level, and what will be funded when it comes to associating anything in the environment and human causes of increasing heat in the environment as a problem. Listen in, please. We'll come back to that in a moment. My engineers say that is frozen instead. Before we go to our next one, I want to share this with you. This is from one of the legislators, Representative Gabbard from Hawaii, who did something that no one else in the Senate did, or the House. She actually went to Syria to see for herself what was going on, instead of trusting the intelligence communities, the National Security Agency, the Defense Department, the Pentagon, the CIA. And she came back, and here's her being challenged on CNN.
Welcome back to Lead Our World Lead Now, a desperate plea for help. 7-year-old Bana Alabed has become the face of innocent civilian suffering in Syria's deadly civil war. The young girl is now safely living in Turkey with her family. But earlier today, she tweeted a message to President Trump, quote, "I beg you, can you do something for the children of Syria? If you can, I will be your best friend. Thank you," unquote. This comes as a fragile ceasefire between Syrian government forces and rebel factions is holding for now. Joining me now in a CNN exclusive is Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii. She just returned from a secret trip to Syria. Congresswoman Gabbard, thanks for coming and sharing your story with us.
Hello, Jake. Good to be with you.
So you were in Syria for 4 days. Did you meet with President Bashar al-Assad?
I did. You know, my reason for going to visit Syria was really because of the suffering of the Syrian people that has been weighing heavily on my heart. I wanted to see if there was, in some small way, a way that I could express the love and the aloha and the care that the American people have for the people of Syria, and to see firsthand what was happening there, to see that situation there.
What did Assad have to say?
Initially, I hadn't planned on meeting him. When the opportunity arose to meet with him, I did so because I felt it's important that if we profess to truly care about the Syrian people, about their suffering, then we've got to be able to meet with anyone that we need to if there is a possibility that we could achieve peace. And that's exactly what we talked about.
Now, I know the maxim that people say in the military that you don't make peace with your friends, you make peace with your enemies. But obviously, Bashar al-Assad is responsible for thousands of deaths and millions of people being displaced during this 5-year-long civil war. Did you have any compunctions about meeting with somebody like that, giving him any sort of enhanced credibility because a member of the United States Congress would meet with someone like that?
Whatever you think about President Assad, the fact is that he is the president of Syria. In order for any peace agreement, in order for any possibility of a viable peace agreement to occur, there has to be a conversation with him. The Syrian people will determine his outcome and what happens with their government and their future. But our focus, my commitment is on ending this war that has caused so much suffering to these Syrians. People, to these children, to these families, many of whom I met on this trip. It's important for us to stay focused on doing what is in their best interest and what is in our best interest, and doing what it is necessary to make that happen.
So, Congressman Adam Kinzinger, a friend of yours, also a military veteran, a Republican, he said on Twitter when he heard about your visit, quote, "Fact-finding mission, fact, 50,000 plus dead children in Syria. Tulsi Gabbard, I hope you didn't meet with their butcher, Assad." Now, Assad has used chemical weapons on his own people. You said it's going to be up to the Syrian people, but there really aren't free and fair elections in Syria.
I'll tell you what I heard from the Syrian people that I met with, Jake, walking down the streets in Aleppo, in Damascus, hearing from them. They expressed happiness and joy at seeing an American walking through their streets. But they expressed a question. They said, why is it that the United States, its allies and other countries are providing support, are providing arms to terrorist groups like al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, Ahrar al-Sham, ISIS, who are on the ground there raping, kidnapping, torturing and killing the Syrian people, children, men, women, people of all ages. They asked me, why is the United States and its allies supporting these terrorist groups who are destroying Syria when it was al-Qaeda who attacked the United States on 9/11, not Syria? I didn't have an answer for them.
Obviously, the United States government denies providing any sort of help to the terrorist groups that you're talking about. They say they provide help for the rebel groups. Tell us more about
the reality is, Jake, yeah. The reality is, and I'm glad you brought up that point, because this is an often talked about thing by people like Adam Kinzinger and others saying, well, we've got to support the moderate rebels. Every place that I went, every person that I spoke to, I asked this question to them. And without hesitation, they said, there are no moderate rebels. Who are these moderate rebels that people keep speaking of? Regardless of the name of these groups, the strongest fighting force on the ground in Syria is al-Nusra or al-Qaeda and ISIS. That is a fact. There's a number of different other groups. All of them essentially are fighting alongside, with, or under the command of the strongest group on the ground that's trying to overthrow Assad. The Syrian people recognize and they know that if President Assad is overthrown, then al-Qaeda or a group like al-Qaeda that has been killing Christians, killing people simply because of their religion or because they won't support their terror activities, they will take charge of all of Syria. This is the reality that the people of Syria are facing on the ground and why they are pleading with us here in the United States to stop supporting these terrorist groups. Let the Syrian people themselves determine their future, not the United States, not some foreign country.
And we've been showing video of your trip, from your trip. In the minute we have left, tell us the most striking image you have from your visit to this war-torn region.
Yeah, Jake, you know, the destruction is very real, both on the physical buildings and the things that people have gone through, looking into their eyes and hearing firsthand from a girl who is now 19, but who, when she was 14 years old, these rebels that people say we should continue supporting, they came and kidnapped her. They raped her multiple times. They killed her father in cold blood right in front of her and her little brother. All she is asking for, literally, is for the United States to stop supporting these so-called rebel groups, stop supporting these terrorists.
I really support her efforts. Good for her. Here's what we do know. We know that Assad was not found guilty of gassing his people. That was based upon information that we have from one of the finest investigative journalists in American history, who wrote a story about this. It was, in point of fact, it was the terrorists over there, and they're all terrorists. There are no such thing as moderate. And we have been giving hundreds of millions of dollars. We gave $500 million, and turns out that only under 10 of them were ever trained with that. All that money was used by ISIS. Did you ever see that one photograph that showed like a 5 mile long of all these exact vehicles that ISIS is using? How did they get them? How come they weren't bombed? How did they get 12,000 to 14,000 oil tankers that were never once bombed? How did they get the gases? All this was explained by Seymour Hersh. And Seymour Hersh was never invited up to Congress to testify under oath about his story. It was simply persona non grata. Here's CNN. CNN is simply a mouthpiece for the neoliberal community and the corporate Democrat community. It is completely biased. He has the resources to do the homework, and yet he hasn't. John McCain's out there, a warmonger. Obama, a warmonger. And yet we won't call it for what it is, and we wonder why the rest of the world is having the feelings towards America that it does. And as long as there's Democrats or Republicans as a unified force in power, the neoliberal agenda will not change. I'll be doing a commentary on this on an upcoming program. Now let's shift over real quick and hear from Bernie Sanders on the new head of the EPA.
97% of the scientists who wrote articles in peer-reviewed journals believe that human activity is the fundamental reason we are seeing climate change. You disagree with that?
I believe the ability to measure with precision the degree of human activity's impact on the climate is subject to more debate on whether the climate is changing or whether human activity contributes to it.
While you are applying for a job as administrator for the EPA to protect our environment, overwhelming majority of scientists say we have got to act boldly, and you're telling me that there needs to be more debate on this issue and that we should not be acting boldly.
No, Senator, as I've indicated, the climate is changing and human activity.
But you haven't told me why you think the climate is changing.
Well, Senator, the job of the administrator is to carry out the statutes as passed by this body and to
comply. Why is the climate changing?
Senator, in response to the CO2 issue, the EPA administrator is constrained by statutes.
I'm asking you a personal opinion.
My personal opinion is immaterial. To the job of
you are going to be the head of the agency to protect the environment, and your personal feelings about whether climate change is caused by human activity and carbon emissions is immaterial?
Senator, I've acknowledged to you that the human activity impacts the climate.
Impacts?
Yes.
Scientific community doesn't tell us it impacts. They say it is the cause of climate change. We have to transform our energy system. Do you believe we have to transform our energy system in order to protect the planet for future generations?
I believe the EPA has a very important role at regulating the emissions.
You didn't answer
CO2.
My question.
So understand what we're hearing. We're hearing the man who has the responsibility for telling Congress and advising the president about the status of the environment. And he was the former attorney general of Oklahoma. I could not find a single instance in looking into his background where he came up against the hydrofracking community, which has caused so many earthquakes that Oklahoma has more earthquakes than all the other states in America combined. And we're waiting for the big one, according to the latest science. They had over 5,000 thus far this year. And the destruction of the underground water supply for all those different farmers, ranchers, whose water is now contaminated if they live downstream from there. But he was supposed to regulate the environment if there was anyone polluting it for the state of Oklahoma. He did not do a single action. He never spoke out once. And he's going to be the person protecting our environment? No. He will not protect anything except the interest of those who are in charge. And we know what their interests are. So therefore, when we have a Guy McPherson on who has the courage to tell the truth, and the group of people I listed also yesterday who had the courage to stand up and tell the truth, and where at least 2,000 to 3,000 other scientists are aware of the truth but may not have the same courage nor have the completeness because they're looking specifically at one area of expertise, acidification of the ocean or glaciers melting or desertification. But when you put all these together and you start seeing the feedback loops, I mentioned these from the Arctic warming yesterday to the Siberian methane venting and the drought in the Amazon, and Greenland's melting, and the invasion of the different types of species that are manifesting like beetles in the forest. When you put it all together, there's something that becomes very clear. That is that the moment the polar ice is gone, when the Arctic is ice-free, then what normally would come is the sun would shine down, hit the ice, and reflect back into the atmosphere, causing no problem. But once there is no ice in the Arctic, the sun comes down, goes through the water, and it's very shallow there, and then it heats up the water and heats up the frozen soil at the bottom, releasing massive amounts of methane. The methane percolates up. It's doing the same thing in the tundras, in Siberia, in the boreal forests, that are mushy slogs now, and then that creates an enormous jump in the heat index. Tremendous. Now, that does not in and of itself mean that everyone just dies. It doesn't work that way. Societies, environments do not collapse. You do not have one tornado that takes out a state. You don't have one hurricane that devastates an entire state. It devastates that which is most vulnerable in a state. New Orleans, for example, with Hurricane Katrina. Sandy, it was New Jersey and New York, and that was a Category 1. That was a smack on the hand. You know, a sledgehammer coming to the head is what we're faced with. And the only way we could deal with this is one group would have us build walls. That won't work because you would have to have a wall going clear up the eastern seaboard. That would cost you trillions of dollars. It's not going to happen. And we are too exposed. The best thing to do is to start realizing that everything underground is not going to be safe, and therefore start your most important, let's say, in irreplaceable institutions, hospitals, etc., move those to a safer environment. Because if you don't, then you're going to see the hurricanes come up, you're going to see tidal surges, you're going to see flooding of the infrastructure. You're also going to see in Kansas and some of our breadbasket states, you're going to see hotter summers because of this, where seeds don't germinate. Longer rains and flooding where whatever is planted will be washed out or rotted. Initially, for the first year, we'll simply see elevated prices because there'll be other states like Montana picking up the slack, Texas picking up some of the slack. So we have enough diversity that we can pick it up. But that only lasts so long because those states are also going to be victimized by this heat. And then you're going to run out of water. Before our soils are incapable of supporting life, our water will already be diminished or gone in many states. You turn on a tap now, you get all the water you want. Whether it's clean enough or not is up for debate. But you have that water. What happens when you turn it on and it's not there? If you're wealthy enough, if you're the 20% of Americans, or about 65 million, who can afford elevated prices, you could afford $5 for a loaf of bread. You won't mind it. Others who can't will. We'll start to see within 3 to 5 years a breakdown in social society. I believe that instead of an entire collapse, as others have predicted, that we will have aerial collapses where you'll have green zones of wealth that will put the resources they have to protect their interest. And everyone else outside of that green zone will fend for themselves. I believe that we need a complete discourse on this, the problems and the solutions. It is not the providence of this program to do it, but I will set aside in the next 2 to 3 weeks, 2 hours, for an in-depth discussion of those of us who actually understand the consequences and what are the solutions. If people choose these solutions, there's no reason they cannot continue with the quality of life. If not, then I do see within the near future, let's say the next 10 years, and that's optimistic, major areas of our planet no longer inhabitable, no longer sustainable of life. And then it begins because these feedback loops will only accelerate. We're past the point of stopping them. They can't be stopped now. So the wise person, when the ocean goes out for 2 miles, doesn't walk out and start picking up seashells. They realize they're about to get hit with a tsunami and go to high ground. We'll have that conversation shortly. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? For those of you who have emailed my office in New York about Nature magazine coming out in support of vaccines and attacking the vaccine autism connection as being nonsense, on my next show, I will directly challenge the authors of their article, show they're unscientific, it's inaccurate, and I will post accurate articles that I've written showing there is a definite connection. That will be coming up in the next program. Real quick before we go to our guest, I want to introduce Luann Panessi and let people know that we have coming up in 2 months a wonderful retreat in one of the most beautiful areas of America with an outstanding team that come together. Whenever we do it, we're only doing one retreat over the next 12 months. This is it coming. And it's at a time of year when everything will be in bloom. All the flowers, all the aromatics, and the butterflies in a perfect environment, away from civilization, in the mountains, lakes, wonderful giant trees, eagles, and then the program of helping people reclaim their life, helping you reclaim your identity, your life, your joy, your all the things you wished for early in life that somehow got detracted, and to get you healthy, to get you cleansed, detoxed, to get your immune system up and powering again, to help you start reversing the aging process. All that's possible. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Yes, I'm signing people up, and in fact, we're almost full for week one. So if you're interested, do give me a call. And I tell you, many people ask me, Gary, what was it that got me to turn my health around? Because many people have heard my story that I was, like, so very toxic. And, you know, I was drinking a lot of coffee. I was a workaholic. I had a high-stress job. I had toxic relationships. And when I came to your retreat in Texas, that is what turned my entire life around. And I'm not alone here. I would suggest that almost everyone that comes to the retreat that is open to learning new information and opening their minds and their hearts to a whole new way of living, they can actually start a whole new chapter in their lives. And they can learn to be happy and healthy. And that's kind of why we keep doing this.
Well, we do it once a year. I did do a little brief one to help WBAI. Had I not, they wouldn't have been able to pay for their premiums. And thank goodness we were able to pay for over 1,000 premiums. So those people got their premiums. And let's just listen to some of the people from 2 weeks ago who attended a one-week retreat. This is just in 1 week this happened to them.
Hi, this is Damien, and I've just completed a week's retreat with Gary. The main reason I came here was to go through a change, and that's what I've done. I accomplished what I came out here to do. The effect out here is very positive, and it made the change that much easier to transition, and it was just so great. If you're not a vegan and you had any meal here, you would swear that it wasn't vegan. It was so nutritious. It just, everything was good. Every meal topped the previous one. And even the first meal was great. Just walking around on the grounds has such a calming effect on your whole body, mentally, physically, emotionally. It's the right place to be. Whatever time you get here is going to be the right time. I interviewed with Luann to come here because she interviews everyone. And she told me there was going to be work involved. That was correct. She told me the food was going to be great. That was correct. She told me the atmosphere was going to be very positive. That was great. What she didn't tell me was the incredible people that I was going to encounter when I came here. That was such a great surprise in such a good way. The people here were just incredible. It was a benefit and a bonus I didn't think I was going to get. But it was so great. What I'm going to take home with me is that I'm going to take the change that I started here and just continue it at home. And I know that will stay with me because it started here. The support that I had here will carry me when I get back home. And that's what I'm going to take with me. The change here started, and I'm just going to take it with me and complete it when I get back home.
I just finished a week with Gary Null, and what I experienced was that it was an enlightening, unique lifetime opportunity that really blended health, nutrition, and wellness in a dynamic and serene environment. There were beautiful educational opportunities and incredible gourmet cooking while being surrounded by innovative, unique individuals. It truly was heaven on earth. You could just feel the energy, see the energy. It was a time for true relaxation, meditation, reflection, really going back to what matters and what's important in life. And the constant reminder of taking those opportunities to reflect and be grateful for what is. And instead of really looking to get away to it all or get away from it all, you're really trying to get to it all. And I'm very grateful to have had this amazing experience.
Yeah, my name is Gary Fikes. I've just spent a week here with Gary Knoll at this retreat, and it's been the whole thing has been just amazing. I assumed that I had everything in total control, my control, and I've discovered that's not the case. And I've begun, the trip's going to be a long trip, but I realized that I've been fortunate to have a fantastic partner for all of my married life, which I've been married a long time. There are things that I need to do to keep the situation the way it is, which I like it, but I haven't said anything. You assume that something is there and it's always going to be there.
Those are just a few of the positive comments. And some of the most remarkable comments we will wait to another time to play. If you'd like to join us, the first 1 or 2 weeks of April, give Luann a call. Luann, give your number, please.
Surely. It's 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. Give me a call,
and I interview everyone to make sure it's
the right kind of an event for you so that people will be surrounded by positive energy. So if you're interested, give me a call, 903-881-7008.
Thank you. It's more than just a retreat. It's more than just yoga, meditation, artist healing, exercising, water aerobics. It's more than communing with nature. It's revealing your authentic self. It's healing the deep wounds from your past. It's cleansing and detoxifying. And it's being able to feel the exuberance and liberation of being free from the trauma, the negative, the drama on the past. So you can give Luann a call. Now, let's go over to my guest who is standing by. Professor Jeffrey Heal, H-E-A-L, is the Donald Waite III Professor of Social Enterprise at Columbia University School of Business School. He specializes in environmental economics and emerging energy markets and sustainable businesses. And he is the Director for the Union of Concerned Scientists and a founding director of the Coalition for Rainforest Nations and the past president of the Association of Environmental and Resource Economists. And over the years, he's held leadership roles in the World Bank's UNEP Human Development Research. And he holds both master's and doctorate degrees from Cambridge University and an honorary doctorate from university in another country, and also universities of Essex, Yale, Stanford, Princeton, and Stockholm. He's authored 18 books, over 200 articles. His most recent is Endangered Economics, How the Neglect of Nature Threatens Our Prosperity, by Columbia University Press. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks very much indeed, Gary. I'm excited to be here.
When we look at the free market economic maxim, which states that we should involve in infinite growth and development, I'm asking, how's that possible? Because we don't have 2 to 3 planets to exploit. Yet as many economists and environmentalists have noted, there cannot be infinite growth that depends upon a planet of infinite resources. Even Karl Marx recognized this in his critique of capitalism. Yet the destruction of the environment for economic growth is not the only related issue. It also concerns social and economic uplift, jobs, our health food and that we eat, or sick food that we eat, and food security. I just did a commentary yesterday with a professor emeritus on the subject of what happens when our climate is no longer compatible with our need for food, yeah, where the seeds can't grow, or they're washed away from excessive rain, or they're scorched by excessive heat, and we're not planning for this. We're not having honest and open dialogue with the American public about what we should be doing to prevent that, to lessen its impact. So if all of the resources are depleted, then an ideology of unregulated economic growth becomes nonsense. So please present the most important synergies or relationships between our current and dominant economic model and worldview and ecology and environment. And then if we look at the loss of conservation of our natural world as creating a kind of feedback loop that threatens prosperity and growth, then how does this continuing destruction of biodiversity and landmass affect any chances for a sustainable economy? The forum is yours.
So, big questions. Thank you very much. You put it very well. I mean, we face some very, very challenging problems. The planet is indeed our home. It's the infrastructure on which we build our whole civilization, and we're damaging it, potentially irreparably. I know climate change is probably the element of this most people are aware of, but you mentioned biodiversity loss, destruction of species, destruction of rainforests. All of those things are part of the same pattern. We're sort of damaging parts of the planet that we really, really heavily depend on. I just take a very simple example. I mean, I just mentioned destruction of rainforests. Well, forests take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and they put oxygen, which we breathe, back into the atmosphere. So all of the oxygen that you and I are breathing ultimately comes from forests, or other plants, but primarily from forests. So if we destroy all the forests, we will destroy the sources of our oxygen. So we're very, very dependent on the natural world. And one of the points I'm making in the book is just this, that sort of unbridled growth of the type that you're talking about threatens our prosperity. It is ultimately self-destructive. How can we handle this? So there's a number of solutions, actually, and that's the good news. So one of the biggest problems that we face here is what we economists call external effects. So let me give an example of that, kind of make it concrete. I mean, suppose that, you know, I buy gasoline from a gas station, and I burn that gasoline in my car. So that's a transaction between me and ExxonMobil or whoever it is that owns the gas station. But that transaction can affect in a negative way millions of other people. You know, because I'm burning the gasoline in my car, I'm putting the greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, and those greenhouse gases change the climate for everybody on the planet. So although, you know, the transaction just involves me and Exxon, everybody else in the world is being damaged by that transaction. So that those damages that go to everybody else are what we call external costs of that transaction. And for the economic system to work well, we really need the people who are involved in that transaction to take account of all those external costs, which we don't do. We need them to pay those external costs. So really, one solution to that would be, for example, to have a charge on gasoline associated with the costs that are imposed on third parties when I burn the gasoline. And that would put the price of gasoline up quite a lot, and then we'd use an awful lot less gasoline. Another problem we have is that a lot of the most important natural resources on the planet are actually not owned. They're nobody's property. And nobody's property often isn't looked after very well. So take the fish in the sea. I mean, fish are an incredibly important resource. The volume of the weight of fish in the sea, the biomass of fish in the sea today, is probably down to around about 10% of what it was 50 years ago. So in the last 50 years, we've reduced the amount of fish in the sea by 90%, which is an extraordinary figure. I almost couldn't believe it when I first saw that figure, but it seems to be true. One of the reasons for that destruction of the fish in the sea is that nobody owns them, and therefore nobody has any incentive at all to conserve them and to keep them for the future. So we need a sort of much, much better conservation regimes, much better property right regimes for the oceans. Again, that's something we've been doing in some parts of the world, actually. And I'll get back to my first point. The Canadian province of British Columbia, for example, recently put a tax on carbon emissions associated with the burning of fossil fuels. Sweden has such a tax, too. So people are beginning to do this type of thing. And the U.S. actually has now some quite good fisheries legislation, which means that fisheries within the U.S.'s territorial waters, the exclusive economic zone, are much better managed than those around the rest of the world on average. Another big deal, really, is just gross the way we measure our economic performance. You know, we tend to rank ourselves, or our politicians rank us anyway, by what happens to what's called gross domestic product, or GDP. It's not a good measure of economic performance. We're worshipping the wrong gods there, economically speaking. Gross domestic product can go up when bad things happen. It can go down when good things happen. It's just not a good measure of overall economic performance. And we can improve on that. We know how to improve on that. There are some really serious problems out there. They're taking us down a road which leads over a cliff, ultimately. But the good news is that we do know how to solve these problems. We just have to focus on doing it.
I appreciate that overview. Thank you. Last year, our National Park Service turned 100 years old.
Yeah.
And it was created in order to preserve the wonders of the natural world and protect it from the abuse of private interest. So when we look back at that, it was among the most truly democratic decisions in American history. Now our public lands are going to be open to unfathomable destruction, not just due to climate change, the loss of biodiversity in forests and grasslands and natural water resources, but also our unquestionable thirst for more and more fuels, lumber, minerals, and other resources necessary for industry. And while Obama did preserve millions of acres of land, public land, and established several national monuments, at the same time, which most people are not aware, shortly before leaving office, he quietly auctioned off thousands of acres of oil and natural gas drilling in natural forests. He also opened up more than 200 million acres of offshore drilling leases in the Gulf of Mexico. It was under Obama that the Endangered Species Act rule changed after years of big oil and gas lobbying campaigns. And for a long time, the Republican Congress has been all too happy to take away public lands and turn them over to private commercial interests. Wasn't it Ms. Romney who asked, what good are public lands anyway? So from your vantage point as a conservationist, what do you foresee happening with respect to policies under Trump and his blind charge forward to extract oil, gas, and coal by any means possible?
It's a disaster. Unfortunately, it's a disaster waiting to happen. Let me just say one thing in defense of Obama, though I agree with everything you said, it's true. One thing Obama did do, which he doesn't get a lot of credit for, is he introduced the oceanic equivalent of national parks, what are called marine protected areas. He introduced some really big marine protected areas. We need protected areas, the equivalent of parks in the oceans, is just as much as we need them on the land, actually, but they don't get anything like as much attention as the ones on the land. The opening up of federal lands to anything, but in particular oil and gas, is very worrying. They should be considered for future generations, just as they are. We really have to, but that's part of a bigger problem, is we really have to move away from fossil fuels. We need to reduce our use of fossil fuels. And then if we stop using fossil fuels, opening up the public lands to drilling companies wouldn't matter so much, because there'd be no demand for their product. And that's ultimately the solution here. We are in a position to do that. The United States could produce all the energy it consumes, all the electricity it consumes, from solar power or from wind power. And within a few years, I think it would be possible for us to drive electric vehicles, which don't depend in any way on oil or gas. So ultimately, I can see the U.S. transiting away from fossil fuels and towards renewable energy. I think what people like you and I have to do is to push as hard as possible for that to happen as fast as possible. That was beginning to happen under Obama. It's obviously Trump will take steps to try to change that. And I think the rest of us have to lobby as hard as we can to stop that. It is feasible. We can move to a renewable energy society, and it won't cost more than the current energy forms are costing us today. So I think those are really important things to remember. I mean, the Republicans are bound to say that this is outrageously expensive, it's not technically feasible, and so on. Those things are just not true.
Final question. We just watched the new to be head of the EPA, who is a former attorney general in Oklahoma, and we could find no reference to where he actively stood up against the hydrofracking and oil interests in Oklahoma, which has more earthquakes than any other state in America. And we're also watching how the EPA is becoming shredded. And there's an ideology inhabiting the White House that regulations are bad for growth and should be removed. Very simply, why are the regulations so important?
So what the regulations are doing is really basically limiting these external costs that I was talking about before. The regulations are preventing people from polluting, and that's crucial. Preventing pollution is crucial to our health and it's crucial to the stability of our climate. You know, I was in China not so long ago, in Beijing and a couple of other cities. They don't have our regulations, and they would love to have them, believe me. The air there was unbreathable. We've all seen pictures of people walking around Beijing wearing face masks, and even with those face masks, they from the pollution. And I got the worst cough I've ever had in my life as a result of 10 days in Beijing. Literally the worst cough I've ever had in my life. And I really wouldn't want to bring kids up in that environment. That's what the regulations do. They prevent us from living in that kind of pea soup fog. They make us healthy. They increase our life expectancy. That's really important stuff.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate all the good work that your different groups, including the Union of Concerned Scientists and the Coalition of Rainforest Nations and the Association of Environmental Resource Economists, are doing. The new book is Endangered Economies, How the Neglect of Nature Threatens Our Prosperity. And my guest, Professor Jeff Heal, HEAL, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks very much indeed. Great being here. Thank you.
I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.